Spectacular introduction, Polly. Thanks for that. I'm actually quite nervous today because I've given about 50 speeches on climate change in the past 12 months, and it's great because you can just come to a forum and press the automatic pilot button and off you go. But when I was asked to come along and talk about innovation, I realised I had to give quite a bit of thought to what I wanted to say and how I wanted to construct what I was going to say, particularly given I was thrown what I saw as quite a challenging topic, which was to talk about the public policy framework around innovation and also to talk about the role of the Management Committee of the Australian Innovation Research Centre, and I'll make some comments on both of those issues and why I see them as challenging as I go. As Polly said, I've been lucky enough to have had involvement in the innovation space for quite a few years now from a number of different perspectives in both the public and private sector. So that started with major involvement with the Defence Science and Technology Organisation in the early 1990s, helping them take their $250 million a year, which is probably $450 million a year now, R&D program and translate that into industry outcomes. I was the manager of industry policy for Australia's largest representative industry body in Canberra, working specifically on innovation policy, and subsequently spent 3 years with the mining industry in Western Australia, which is an incredibly innovative industry. I was in the Department of Economic Development, where I came across Polly, for 5 years and was responsible overall for policy and program delivery in the innovation space. And I'm currently a member of the boards or the management committee of the Australian Innovation Research Centre, which kind of makes me Jonathan West's boss, which is incredibly satisfying. And also a board member of the Anti-Climate and Ecosystems Cooperative Research Centre. So I'm going to be quite critical today about our approach to innovation, but I want to make it clear that I'm actually being quite critical of myself because I've been implicitly involved in a number of efforts that the state has made and the Commonwealth has made in the innovation space. So I'm not trying to argue today that other people have done the wrong thing. I'm actually suggesting that I've been part and parcel of that. So let's talk about the national approach to innovation. And the reason I think that an overview of the public policy framework for innovation is an interesting topic is because I actually don't see much evidence that governments have had a coherent framework for innovation in Australia over the last 20 years. I think it's the absence of a public policy framework for innovation which is particularly interesting. And maybe this is because we struggle still in 2008 to define what we mean by innovation. The definitions I hear tend to range from, well, innovation basically means all things to all people, to innovation means inventing new technology, and anything in between. And maybe it's because the word innovation is kind of like the word blue or the word red. We all know what it means, but it's really difficult to define it accurately in words without pointing to things and saying, well, you want to know what blue is? That carpet is blue. You want to know what innovation is? There's an example of innovation. And as an aside, probably because it's so difficult to define, it's also relatively difficult to measure. So we have all sorts of proxy measures for innovation. We talk about numbers of patents registered relative to population or trends in expenditure in R&D, but like the definitions, I don't think they're particularly satisfactory either. So that's one of the great gaps in the public policy framework around innovation, is a coherent and widely accepted definition of what it is and an agreed set of benchmarks to help us measure it and chart our progress in lifting it. For the purposes of today, I'd like to think that innovation includes, at the very least, the development and application of new products and services and processes and technologies and organisational approaches to improve the productivity and outputs of institutions in our community. If you look at that definition, a couple of things. One, innovation is not just about technology, and two, I don't think innovation is confined, as many people would argue, to companies in the private sector. I think innovation is equally applicable to the community sector and to government, even though most of my comments today will concentrate on the private sector. Historically, our approach to innovation in Australia, I think, hasn't been particularly robust. In fact, the traditional approach has really been about saying, innovation is good, let's have more, and then what we do is we go out and we invest lots of money in untargeted and uncoordinated initiatives, and we kind of hope that innovation will somehow result. So what are some of the examples of this? Well, the key areas of emphasis over the past 15 or 20 years in Australia, I think, have been firm-based assistance programs to support development and commercialisation of intellectual property by the private sector. So we're talking about research and development start grants or commercialising emerging technology funds. So again, it's very company specific. There's a company, it's got a good idea, it needs some money to take it to the next stage. In isolation of thinking about industry or the economy, I'm going to deal with that company one-on-one. The next group of initiatives is really firm-based subsidies and concessions to facilitate greater business expenditure on R&D or investment in technology transfer. So the classic one there is the R&D tax concession. Again, relatively unfocused, unstrategic, not linked to any particular broad objectives. Individual company, you've invested in research and development, congratulations, I'm going to give you a tax concession. And the third has been some investment in commercialisation of Australia's public sector R&D, and that's really been through the Cooperative Research Centre program and things like ARC linkage grants. And again, my contention would be that's been relatively unstrategic. It's been based on a fairly simplistic view that public sector R&D bodies have got lots of IP. If we simply throw money at them, that will magically be commercialised. That will lead to innovation. That's a great thing. We've also seen, particularly in the 1990s, a bit of hard and soft infrastructure investment around this concept of clusters. So we really got carried away with this notion that if we could encourage cohabitation by clusters of like-minded and complementarily skilled firms, innovation will magically blossom. We just have to put them together, sort of like putting mould in a petri dish. Something will magically grow out of it. It'll produce penicillin. All we have to do is stick them together. We'll go back in 2 years and something magically will have come out. The interesting thing for me when I read back into the history of innovation policy in Australia is there's very little evidence to suggest that anybody actually sat down before they introduced those initiatives and said, how does innovation work, and what role is government best placed to play, and what are the barriers to innovation in Australia, and how can we best remove them? Again, we just as governments formed this implicit view that innovation was good, it was exclusively the province of the private sector, so let's throw some money at them, encourage them to do research and we'll be innovative. Which is interesting because in this day and age our approach to public policy in almost every other space is far more analytically based than our approach to innovation seems to have been. And maybe that was based on the concept of an article of faith, that if you simply throw money at institution-specific systems, that will see knowledge transferred down the pipeline from R&D and commercialisation to industrial application. But again, it has been an article of faith, and it's still firmly held in many areas of Australia. And that same article of faith view looked at government and said, well, the private sector is responsible for innovation, so what should government do? Well, as an article of faith, what government should do is grease the wheel when there's a failure in capital markets. That's your role, government, is to provide access to finance. Jonathan West has just arrived. I was hoping he wouldn't be here because I thought to myself, giving a paper on innovation, it's going to be like giving a term paper in front of my lecturer. So, if you don't like what I say from now on, all the great stuff you missed, Jonathan. I think one of the great problems with that approach, which may explain our relatively poor results more recently relative to other developed countries, is that those three sets of initiatives have been really poorly linked and really poorly coordinated. And the initiatives themselves, as I said, were untargeted. So that lack of coordination may be one reason why Kim Carr recently referred to the bewildering array of programs and activities and networks in the playing field of Australian innovation. Because we haven't taken a systemic approach, because we haven't invested time and effort in understanding the problem, because we've leapt to this article of faith which sees government saying, well, our role in innovation is simply to grease the wheel and throw money at the problem in the private sector and hope for the best. We had more and more and more initiatives come up and less and less and less coordination between them. We've also worked under the assumption that innovation is about science and technology alone. So we've seen this view that if we invest more in one, if we invest more in science and technology, and very much applied science and technology, then again, we will magically get more innovation out of the private sector as a result. What we didn't ever say is, see, maybe we should focus on building the capacity of firms within our economy to take and apply the scientific product, or to innovate in other areas of business activity. We simply assumed that if the scientists rolled up with the intellectual property, then companies would inherently be able to take it and run with it to market. We didn't invest in their capacity to do so. And as an industry lobbyist throughout this period, in particular in the late 1990s, I have to say that I was complicit in this firm-based approach, because I was constantly arguing on behalf of my members that you shouldn't waste money on the CSIRO, you shouldn't waste money on the university system, and you know what, we're business and we don't need your help in building our capacity, just give us more money to do research, just give us more money to commercialise, and innovation will naturally be the result. And that was very much the flavour of the industry lobby in the late 1990s, particularly around the R&D tax concession. Just give us this very blunt tool of rewarding us financially for any research and development we do, whether it's in the national interest or not, and innovation will result, it'll be okay. For all that, we did make some pretty impressive gains in the 1990s when the focus on innovation really started. But the international economy has moved on since then, and our investments and the forms of investments we make in innovation really haven't. And that's probably why Terry Cutler's found in his Venturist Australia report for the Australian government that, and I'm quoting here, Australian innovation seems to have slowed or even stalled in the new millennium. And that's probably one reason why earlier this decade we went from a situation in which our productivity was growing substantially faster than the OECD average to one where it is now growing substantially slower. And while we made some important early gains off a low base, one of the reasons why we've stalled now is that we're failing to invest enough in the enablers of innovation, in the system of innovation. So here are three examples. Australia's public expenditure on education now ranks 19th out of 30th and is slightly below the OECD average in terms of total public expenditure on education as a proportion of GDP. Australia also lags behind leading OECD countries in terms of the resources devoted to R&D, both in business expenditure and government expenditure, with business expenditure as a proportion of GDP just half the OECD average. And public investment in research has declined since 1995, with university funding for research falling further behind the full cost of conducting that research. And government research agencies like CSIRO have suffered similar successive funding cutbacks. Of course, there's only so much you can ever do in Australia. Our share of world R&D expenditure is small, it's about 1.3%, and our share of new knowledge and innovation each year is about 2%. So even substantial increases in our effort in both these areas would see us playing a big part on the global innovation stage. But just because you have a big part doesn't mean you can't aspire to be a leader in this space for a relatively small economy. What it means, though, is that 98% of knowledge and innovation is created elsewhere, and it's essential that we're able to access it and apply it or be overtaken by those that do. And that's also a fundamental part of the innovation system that we haven't focused on in the past, establishing networks and links and collaboration that provide access to international sources of innovation and investing in the capacity of Australian organisations to capture it and adapt it successfully. And that principle is equally applicable in Tasmania. So let me turn briefly to innovation policy in Tasmania. We've seen some recent work by the Australian Innovation Research Centre that actually shows we're doing, I think, surprisingly well in the innovation space in this state. So the Census of Innovation in Tasmania found that innovation can be found across all sectors of our economy. That said, it's also found that the proportion of highly innovative firms is low. A relatively small group of firms accounts for most of the sales of innovative products and most of the innovation investments. Almost a third of the companies undertaking innovative activity do so by investing in areas other than research and development. Again, you might reflect on the point that I made earlier, that Australia's approach to innovation has been to equate it with R&D, and yet the majority of innovative activity that firms undertake is not associated directly with research and development. The other surprising thing for me that came out of the census was that those companies that are innovative, many of them have a fairly healthy level of collaboration with the University of Tasmania, which is interesting because, there may be somebody from the University of Tasmania here, I'm not telling tales out of school, one of the complaints you frequently hear from Tasmanian businesses about their relationship with research organisations is how difficult they find it to engage, particularly with bodies like the university. And yet one of the markers of successful innovators in Tasmania's industry is the fact that they have somehow overcome that barrier and engaged actively with the university and have grown as a result. So what have we done to help create this situation in Tasmania where innovation is reasonably frequent in our economy, and what more do we need to do to make it even more pervasive? Well, like every other jurisdiction, our investment in innovation traditionally has been about creating a pipeline pathway for firms to commercialise technology. So we've really emphasised having something to assist the commercialisation process for all types of companies, whatever stage they are in the development process. Whether it's an inventor with a twinkle in the eye, or it's a medium-sized company that's got difficulties accessing capital, we said, well, we've got something for you. We can help you overcome that capital barrier, which is very similar to the approach that we've seen across the country. So if you're an inventor, we've got a program that can help you judge the commerciality of your idea. If you're a micro business or a startup, we provide intensive commercialisation, skills development, and we could put you in an incubator to help you grow and mature as a company. If you're a small company with a new idea, we've got a mentoring program for you. And if you're an SME with difficulty getting access to capital, we can provide that capital too. But interestingly, all those initiatives, again, are very firm-specific. Not particularly coordinated, not particularly targeted, not necessarily underpinned by a view of, from an economic perspective in Tasmania, where are we best placed to invest our innovation dollar. They're very much about an individual company on a case-by-case basis that appears to have an idea with commercial potential and us greasing the wheel by providing access, in particular to capital, to help it go to the next stage. So we've invested relatively less in actually increasing the likelihood of Tasmanian organisations generating those good ideas in the first place, or getting and applying technology from elsewhere, or other aspects of the innovation framework. So put another way, historically we've been very good at investing in companies, but not very good at investing in the human capital, the institutions, the facilities, the information and data, and the regulatory framework that is so important for a healthy innovation system to encourage the evolution of successful companies that can apply innovation as the basis of their growth strategy. This has started to change, I think, in the past 5 years in particular. So we've seen a very strong investment recently at a state level in human resources through education, and particularly the VET system. And I think, interestingly, our rhetoric around that has changed. Where traditionally governments have invested in education because they think they should invest in education, we're now starting to argue publicly that investment in education is also important for a growing economy, to equip people with the right skills to help take our economy forward. We've also seen growing support in this state for targeted research through bodies like the Tasmanian ICT Centre, established under Intelligent Island, or the Antarctic Climate and Ecosystems and Forestry CRCs, or centres of excellence around ore deposit and exploration or separation science, or bodies like TAPI and TR. And I think that's a great sign that we're being more strategic about our investment in R&D, with a strong view on what sort of mechanisms and what sort of areas will best position the Tasmanian economy moving forward. I think we're also on the precipice of seeing some substantial change in the way the Australian government does business in the innovation space, particularly following the release of the Cutler and O'Kane reviews. Unfortunately, the emergence of the global financial crisis means that the Commonwealth government, which was due by now to have released its responses to both those major reviews, is now putting those on the back burner until it understands in more detail what the implications of declining revenue mean for its expenditure going forward. Let me turn now to the Australian Innovation Research Centre. And I think within Tasmania we have a really great opportunity to contribute to the Australian government's thinking in the innovation space. The Australian Innovation Research Centre, which is based here in Hobart, is leading the charge for innovation to be considered from a more systemic perspective rather than that case-by-case, company-by-company perspective. As I said, I was asked to talk about the Management Committee of the Australian Innovation Research Centre as part of my talk today, but I can't imagine anything more boring than talking to you for 10 minutes about a Management Committee of a research centre. So I'm not going to do that. So I apologise to the organisers. I do want to make one overarching point, though. Terry Cutler's review found that, and I'm quoting again, there is a lack of policy coherence reflected in the fragmentation of innovation resources across government. Now, I would have gone one step further. I would have said in Australia, not only is there a fragmentation, but there's actually a dearth of quality thinking about innovation. You know, just because you're a state and you have an innovation centre doesn't mean it's full of top-class researchers generating leading-edge thinking about innovation who are going to revolutionise your economy. You know, I can wear a T-shirt that says world's greatest sprinter, it doesn't mean that I can run 100 in less than 10 seconds. This is where I think the Australian Innovation Research Centre has real potential to establish itself in the pantheon of Australian innovation thinking, because I think it's already the definitive source of policy advice to governments on encouraging growth of innovation-based economies. And I think at a time when the Australian government is recognising that it needs to take a far more systematic approach to innovation, but there's a lot of analytical grunt required before it can launch into new directions, we have a centre based here in Hobart that genuinely has a collection of first-class, internationally renowned research leaders in innovation to help drive that going forward. I think it's something that's unrecognised, but something we should be really proud of. A few concluding comments. I've spent most of my time this morning talking about innovation from a business perspective. And as I said, I think innovation is just as important for the growth and vitality for the community and public sectors. And here, like in the private sector, we can do much better. We only need to look at the relatively uncoordinated approach in the public sector in Australia and Tasmania taken to managing intellectual property, or the community sector's general unwillingness to make a step change to new models of service delivery, as opposed to trying to squeeze more and more and more and more out of existing models, to realise that there's huge potential for more innovative approaches. And that need for innovation across all spheres of activity is going to grow in this state, because we're facing a series of new challenges that can't be addressed through traditional approaches. We've got an ageing demographic. We need to adapt to climate change. We have major concerns about energy security. We see chaos in the global financial markets that surround us. And together, they're offering a series of challenges like no jurisdiction, including Tasmania, has ever seen before. And unless we do business differently across all areas of the community, we're not going to meet those challenges. So here are some of the changes that I'd like to conclude by mentioning to you that I think we're going to need to think about as we move forward in this space. First of all, we can't afford to fall into the trap of continuing to assume that innovation equals high technology and knowledge-intensive industries. These are in fact a relatively minor part of the Tasmanian economy, and if we concentrate on them at the exclusion of all others, then we'll leave the majority of our industries and the majority of our economy behind. Secondly, we have to do a better job in government of managing our intellectual property for the good of the community and the good of the economy. We're actually a great generator of new and sexy and revolutionary ideas and processes in government. But we need the market and the community to take those from us and to adapt and apply them successfully, because that's not our job. That's not what the public sector does. Third thing is we have to strengthen the relationship in this state between our scientific community and industry. And organisations like our CRCs and the CSIRO and the Antarctic Division, we have a fantastic, internationally renowned wealth of expertise in research and development, which in many cases has almost no links to the Tasmanian economy. And there's a great opportunity to do better in that space. Fourthly, we have to adopt a strategic focus. We can't possibly hope to be good at everything, because no economy can. And here I think state governments have an advantage, because unlike the federal government, where every time it focuses on a particular sector of industry, it gets accused of picking winners, there's some acceptance that state governments, by virtue of the fact that they have much smaller economies, can in fact pick winners. They can in fact be strategic and targeted. They can get away with it. And I think that's something we should embrace. And finally, we have to focus on the systems supporting innovation in this state, not on case-by-case interactions with companies that have commercialisation potential. That's the only way the economy will grow through innovation, as opposed to individual enterprises within the economy growing through innovation. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attention.